Up next on justicefound.org, Roland Washington interviews Rodrigo Garcia Alcarez and Leslie Lugo from Mission Dignity. Today on Worker Justice Talk, they discuss Mission Dignity and its role in the San Francisco community as a youth-led organization. This is David Kortzmeyer from the Justice Foundation, and I am excited to bring you another edition of the Worker Justice Talk with the host, Roland Washington.
This is Roland Washington for justicefound.org and a community worker on KPOO San Francisco. Today we're going to talk about consciousness, and actually we're going to talk about consciousness from a mission district and a mission district in transition perspective. So I have some young, or at least younger than me, mission district people. So I have with me Rodrigo Garcia Alcaraz and Leslie Lugo. What are you doing? What are you guys doing over here? What's happening in the Mission District? What's going on with you guys? You, I think one is 23, and how old are you?
I'm 18.
18. So, and I'm 51, so there's a big difference. So, tell me what it's like. Tell me what's happening.
Well, now that I've returned to the San Francisco and the Mission District, I see there's a lot of construction going on. I mean, just across the street, there's a lot of housing that's going up that's not for us, that's not accessible to people who work here in the city. And there are those people there who say that, why do we need to have more poor people? You know, why should poor people have to live in San Francisco? Somebody told me that recently. But also, Mission Dignity, our nonprofit organization, peer education and college resource center here in the Mission District is going through the redevelopment phase, and Leslie and I are part of the core group of people who are working to redevelop this program to provide an excellent quality of service to the young people out there through the theme of consciousness, which is going to be our topic today. We're going to speak a little bit about what critical consciousness is, who bore the idea, how it applies to Mission Dignity, and how it's applied to us, and how it's helped shape us into active, awake young people, because I feel that a lot of our young people are asleep. We're walking around dazed and confused, if you will, and we're not really breaking down what's going on around us. So that's why we feel consciousness is so important, because it allows us to do that, analyze things, why it is, why it should be that way, why it shouldn't be that way. And that's why this theme is so important and why we've chosen it for our organization. But today we're going to talk about just how it's affected us, really. Leslie.
Yeah, dude. We're here for Mission Dignity, and we kind of have a different, we take things differently, or we approach things differently here in Mission Dignity, and how we use critical consciousness as one of the our core, how would you say it, core
theme?
Our core theme. There you go. Our framework. So I mean, and that what that means is that we value a lot educating ourselves and knowing what we're talking about, knowing who we are as individuals and as a community, and how we can actually impact the young people like ourselves. That are going to school and maybe not awake, like Rigo was saying, not really thinking, not really knowing where we're going, where we're at, what we want to do in the future. And I mean, for myself, Mission Dignity has impacted my life a lot. I came in here when I was 15, and I was taught many different things. I mean, we read books that young folks in college are reading and some aren't, and actually talking about these things that are going around in our community. Why is it happening? from different perspectives, taking a holistic point of view, seeing why is it that we walk around lost? Why is it that there's violence in our communities? Why is it that a lot of people are leaving the city? Why is there construction going on, and why are people disappearing? So that's just an example of what we learn here.
So Leslie, can I ask you a question? Because we work with youth, and then one of the things I kind of ask everybody at some point, and some of them has been edited out, is like, why are the black and brown young men killing each other? And you as a young woman, a young Latina woman, and you're talking about critical consciousness, why do you think they're killing each other?
Well, I think the base of that is that we don't know where we're coming from. We don't know what's happened. I mean, we can say that, we can actually ignore that and say a lot of times, oh, we get along, you know, we just sometimes don't talk to each other or get into fights. And it's just, I mean, we don't know what happened in the past. Why is it that in the 60s, you know, we had this, with this we had unified and like had worked together, and now all of a sudden we don't? We're struggling in the same way, and we're going through a lot of similar things. You know, we're poor. We're seeing all this violence, and I mean, the only way that we feel we can actually get to school or get into some higher power is by fighting with each other instead of actually getting together and seeing, okay, why is it that we're in this situation? What has brought us here? Why don't we know where we're coming from? Why are these bridges not there anymore? So, I mean, just a lot of different things go into that.
Do you think it's a suicidal thing? I mean, if the young men kill each other, then who's going to be the fathers? Who's going to take care of the, you know, quote, take care of the women, take care of the community? Are they trying to abdicate their responsibilities, or?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's different, we have like a lot of gender roles. I mean, and a lot of times the only way we learn how to be a man or learn how to be a woman is by maybe ideas that aren't true. So, I mean, some people think, oh, being a man is carrying a gun around instead of actually being a person and being responsible and trying to think, well, is carrying a gun really valuable? Is that really going to prove to someone else that I'm a man, I'm adult? And I mean,
well, I have a couple of takes on it, and it really breaks it down to the different levels at which we're not meeting at. I think number one, it looks like people who are higher up, they get along, right? There's money, everybody's happy. So I think those black folks and us brown folks who are up there, we seem to get along. But it's us poor folk who aren't getting along. And since we're in survival mode, we are constantly trying to step on each other's toes, because I'm trying to get what homeboy has, and homeboy's trying to get what the brother has, and that's why that's occurring is, and it's also what Leslie is saying, that there's no history there. There's no recollection of history, how both of us have struggled, right, in our own unique ways, and recognizing that we both go through the same things. Like, for example, there's the I've just blanked out. What is the person who's African American but thinks he's white? What's that that word, that phrase?
Uncle Tom.
Uncle Tom, right? And then there's the coconut, right?
Yep.
So, you know, we both have those things, but it seems as though we don't sit around a table enough to discuss them. And also, we can't respect each other's differences enough to get along, you know, because I think that's the other thing that doesn't get addressed, is that, yeah, we're different. We have to acknowledge that. You know, we can't get along and come to the table and pretend like, oh, we're both the same, because we're not. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not the same. We're different. We come from different cultures. We come from different belief systems that all tie back, eventually interconnect to the same thing, you know, to the same creator, to the same type of body, to the same anatomy, whatever you want to call it. And that's what I think is happening, you know, and just the fact that also there's so much poison coming in from the mainstream that is poisoning our young people as well to act certain ways. You know, you have to be macho, you have to go out there and rep, you have to go out there and be the one with the best clothes and have your territory and have your stuff. But, you know, going back to the theme of consciousness, you know, we have to realize that we don't really own those things, right? We don't really own that block, you know, whether it be the 800 block in the Fillmore, whether it be, you know, 19th Street on the Mission, it's not ours. Because at any point in time, the government can come in here and take that from us, you know, and that's what we forget, right? Mm-hmm. But we're still in the theme that, oh, we don't own anything, you know. And then if you even have ourselves victimized and say, oh, well, you know, it's because I'm a poor immigrant, or because, you know, I'm Mexican, nobody like me, or this and that. And same thing happens with the brothers, oh, because I'm black, it's this and that. Constantly victimizing ourselves, you know. We never think enough of ourselves to say, you know, who cares what people think? You know, I'm going to make an effort to be different and embrace that difference and really bring about some change for myself, right? So there's just really a lack of empowerment. There's a lack of education. And there's a lot of venom flowing through our minds and through our streets and through our televisions and everything. And that's what makes it so difficult for young people to find somebody to identify with, because there's just no positive models out there. You know, you have all these people who are fake. You know, I'll come out and say that all these hip-hop artists that come out there and they say, oh, you know, let's get together and, you know, the movement and this and that. You got Nas and all these other people talking about like they're revolutionaries or something. They're doing something different, but they're up there repping something else. They got the big rims on their car and they got the bling bling around their neck. You know, they ain't grassroots. You know, they ain't really about it. They're about the mighty dollar. And that's the problem, that we're too busy trying to get to that mighty dollar, and it's like we're taking Malcolm's theme in the wrong way, right? By any means necessary. That means killing off my community, killing off my own people to get to the top. So I think the big thing is a lack of consciousness, and that's why this is occurring. That's why there's so much violence. And until we can bring in people and sit them around a table and put all the cards on the table and say, these are your options, man. You know, this is what you can do, you know. This is what's possible for you. And really, the doors that can open for you are endless. But seeing it from the perspective as of a young person, you have time, man, to do things that are different. Unfortunately, there's some young people out there say, hey, man, you know, I don't have that. I don't have tomorrow, man. I could get shot. I could have this happen. But, all right, that's cool. Well, let's do something today. What can we do today, right? How can we bring about change today, you know? So,
do you have some suggestions?
Well, I think overall is take the time to really love yourself, really, really nurture yourself, number one, because we have to take care of ourselves, right? You know, but I think the other thing is really tapping into other role models, other people in the community, really asking those people questions. Because I think that's where the process begins. You know, we have to challenge each other, you know, in a critical, in a constructive manner, right? Not in a way that, oh, well, what do you know? Or what are you going to teach me? But in the sense of, you know, well, what can I learn? Well, how is it that you know this and I don't? What is this history you talk about? So I think what my advice is for people to go out there and start questioning some of these community leaders, right? And really trying to figure out, well, how can this person really help me? If this person is a leader, well, what can it really teach me? And question those people, because at Mission Dignity, that's what we will do. We tell the kids and said, you have questions about this vision statement, read it. You come in here and you drill me about it. You know, you ask me. You put me to the test, right? Because I want you to see that we're for real. We want you to see that we have our stuff down, because unfortunately, there's a lot of people out there who say they got this stuff and want to do this and they want to do that, but then they don't even know what they're doing, right, half the time. So I think that's a big thing, is to go out to these organizations are really challenging, you know, because the young people, they sit in there and they come, these organizations come in and they do presentations in their schools, but, you know, they're not challenging them, and that's what needs to happen, you know. So maybe that's a way to start, is by seeing what the resources are and really putting them to the test, right? And if you notice that there's nothing going on there, nothing is happening, well, maybe you should get involved, right? Because you have a mind, you have a body, you have a soul, and you have a heart. And you can do work, you know. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to be involved in the community and create change.
Why do you think people don't take advantage of places like Arriba Juntos and I think it's called the La Raza, mm-hmm. La Raza Community Center?
I think people aren't taking advantage of these things. I mean, somewhere along the lines that Rigo was saying, we are being given different values. You know, we're not saying, oh, I'm going to go to this place because I feel that I can contribute to my community. We're not thinking that way. We're thinking, I'm going to go buy that nice skirt that I saw was on sale at some place, you know? And people aren't thinking that way. So, I mean, if people aren't thinking this way, then how are they expecting people to walk into their program and try to help them? We don't know that we're asleep. We don't know it. And so if we're walking around asleep, we're not going to have our priorities and our values in the right places. I mean, and that's where it begins. I mean, you need to wake up. You need to have this consciousness and see, okay, am I valuing more that skirt that I'm going to get tomorrow than my education or my life, my mind? You know, so our values.
I think it's also conformity. Sometimes we get afraid. We're afraid of change too, you know. And we say, "Well, I'm cool where I'm at. You know, why do I want to come in and be taught something? You know, and you know, have these people help me? You know, it's like, what if they can't do anything? What if in the end I go through the program and I do it and nothing happens? You know, so it is that. It's also that fear as well, you know. And I know for people in the Latin community that. You know, the countries that a lot of the immigrants in this Latin community come from, there's the fear of government. You know, the organizations that, from what I saw in Mexico living out there those 2 years, you know, organizations out there, you know, they say they're civil organizations and they're nonprofit, but, you know, they're looking to just get a buck from you, you know, and they say they can help you and they can say they can try to do this for you, but doesn't look like it's really happening. So people don't have any trust in organizations. When people see an institute or they see a building or they see somebody sitting at a desk at a reception desk, they see somebody who's going to try to get off on me, right? Trying to get over me. Either take my money or take something that I have or even further limit me and receiving a service. So there's also that fear as well of being getting ripped off. And that also, I think, goes into the reason why folks don't visit these places, because, you know, there's that fear.
It's like, even in the Black communities, like, you can come from wherever, and then somebody could say, you know, you ain't related. Somebody says your cousin so-and-so, or, like, you see another brother on the street, you reach out to him and on. I know it was that way, like, with the Latin community. And on. Now it's like, people can actually really be your blood, mm-hmm. and you don't want them in your house, or you don't want to help. Why is there no community? Why do you think there's no community, at least for some people? Why is there no community? I mean, why is it that they can start taking all the merchants off of Mission Street? Because Mission was a viable place. Spanish-speaking banks and on and on and on. They were lending to people that had businesses around here and on and on. Now it's to the point that you can't even stand on Army Street. What is happening? Why isn't the community saying, no, we want our community back? They're painting over the murals now on a lot of these buildings. What's happening? How come the people are letting that happen?
There's no collectivism at all. I mean, we're so concerned about getting up to the top and having that nice car and that nice house and that whole American dream thing. I mean, it's just our priorities aren't in the right places. I mean,
or could it be that the young people just like, that's old and let's just do something different? Could it be that it might be there and you guys just saying these old icons aren't working and you're going to make some new ones? Or,
yeah, you know, I think it goes back to also the adults. You know, if we see our parents and say, hey, you know, I'm doing good, I'm working at this, you know, low-end job, making this money, and, you know, that this is what I got and I'm going to hold on to it. Why am I going to picking fights, you know, or fighting things that might get me in trouble or somebody might call too much attention to myself, mm-hmm. you know? But yeah, it's a lack of collectivism, and I think nobody's preaching that enough. And I think the mistake that some of these resource stations are making is that, you know, they're just helping people get jobs, or they're helping kids set up, you know, college education and stuff like that, but they're not teaching them what's really important, which is that they have to be conscious that the things that have gone on in this community are important to the growth of it. You know, if you paint over the murals, if you throw away the books or the flyers that got passed out in the 50s or the 60s about the movements and consciousness and social change and all that, then all you do is you become the same people who are moving in, you know, just people who are trying to make the dollar, trying to have fun, trying to, you know, not just have a sense of individuality, and that's it. You know, it's like reaching the top and forget everybody else. So, you know, I think that's what's happening. People just losing hope. You know, I think, unfortunately, a lot of us feel that way, that it's like, well, that's the way it is, and, you know, the rich person is a rich person, and that's it, and he's going to call the shots or whatever, but, you know, we have to be like little David and stand up to Goliath, right?
Yeah.
So what does consciousness mean to you?
Well, consciousness, I think, is just being awake. It's what it is, being conscious, right? But the theme we put out on the table to our young people here is critical consciousness. So that means you question things. Who, what, where, when, why? Right? Why is it that this is like this? How should it be? You know? Why shouldn't it be that way? Right? I know that's what our associate director, Emilio Osorio, taught us, is to find out, well, how are things? How should they be? And what was the other one? The way things are, the difference between what is, what isn't, and what ought to be, right?
Mm.
That's what I remember most about being conscious and being critically conscious, is analyzing everything. You know, even to a commercial on TV or something you read in the paper,
mm-hmm.
you break it down. You don't just take it in and say, okay, it is just that way. Just accept it for what it is, or because it's in print, you know, that's just the way it goes. You know, it's cool. It's correct. So critical consciousness is really really being rebel-minded, you know, and saying, well, why is it that way? You know, what can I do to change that? Mm-hmm. What are the different aspects? And how can I relate it to spirituality, the environment, to biology? How can I relate it to all these different angles, right? Leslie, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, the whole holistic approach, I mean, because everything connects. I mean, everything. You think about the psychology of things, biology, the ecology, I mean, everything, technology. I mean, things are so different now than they used to be back in the day. I mean, how can we use these new things to change things? I mean, it's just all that. And I think also critically thinking everything, you know, like questioning everything and applying it to yourself. I mean, there's also like everything in integrity. If you're going to sit here and talk about, okay, I'm trying to help my community, what are you showing? I mean, when it comes down to it, we're the role models. We're the future. So what are people going to see when they look at us? So, I mean, and Mission Dignity has helped in that and helped shape kind of what, you know, what I want to do in the future. Why is it that I want to be a teacher? You know, like that's what I want to do, and I feel like that'll be my contribution to my community. Because I mean, everyone tries to get out, but I mean, you have to get out and then go back, because that's where you came from, and that's your kind of role. I mean, that's the way I see it. So,
well, how they say the more things change, the more they say stay the same. So it's interesting because you keep saying the stuff about people wanting to get out and do whatever, but then, you know, we're being shown that racism still exists. You got this epidemic of these supposed hanging nooses and Agenda 6, and then you have the Minutemen patrolling the border, and I'm sure there might even be black guys involved in this. You have people who are showing that racism still exists. And racism, before it was blatantly black and white, because that's how they separated it. There's mm-hmm. there's a book called The Jim Crow Guide, where it didn't matter what you were, you were either black or white in America. And then it seems like now that we've been given all these wonderful multicultural labels, we are ignoring that it still exists. Mm-hmm. So I work in public health, and I also am part of a union. And the unions are still have people that don't look like us running them and still using our icons to say why we should be involved in them. And with the shootings and everything, there are union members' children that are being killed, but labor does not come out and stop the shooting. Now, they can stand, and everybody knows, when Cesar Chavez was doing his thing, labor people came out and stood out there and kept those brothers from doing their thing, to the point there's the famous incident where a guy got killed, and I believe it was a labor guy that killed the dude. I'm blanking on all the names because it's a long time, but it's very interesting how if you can find an enemy or marginalize somebody based on the color of their skin, how we are still buying into, as long as you're a little lighter, or you Salvadorian and I'm Nicaraguan and we're and Hondurans and you got black people along the coast, but they're different in, but all this other stuff. And then as we all get here, well, guess what? The Minutemen say immigrants are immigrants. Indians on and on. And instead of us coming together, we are still trying to get out, and everywhere we get out to, they don't want us. I mean, where is this community that all the people of color are going to when they leave San Francisco? Where's the multiracial community that's in the Bay Area, this heaven that all the black people and Latino people are going to when they get their money on? I mean, where is it? Antioch? You know, Tracy? I mean, where is this? There's no Black Hawk for minority people, you know, a nice oasis that the minority people are. And so I'm assuming that when you move to these areas, it's persona non grata like it was before.
Yeah.
So why do you think, if instinctively, I'm sure people know it, there's only like one J-Lo, how come there's not a whole lot of Puerto Rican women out there? You know, there's one Rihanna. I mean, you're still not getting these images to say there's a whole bunch of people of color. There's like one Mark Anthony, one so-and-so, but you got a bunch of Britney Spears and everybody. You know, there's room for everybody else, but not for us. And so, consciously, why do you think we're still buying into that?
I think we're buying into those false images, that false sense of power. I think that's what's occurring. People want to have that false sense of power because they feel secure. They feel safe. Nobody wants to be vulnerable. Nobody wants to be humble. Everybody wants to be on top. Everybody wants to be powerful. Everybody wants to be the community leader. But nobody wants to be the worker, right?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody wants to be up there and be the warrior that came back from the fight and is glorious. But nobody wants to be the farmer. Nobody wants to be the one who's putting up the pyramids, right? You know, we have a lot of raza talk about, you know, oh, well, you know, I'm the warrior, you know, and I go out there and, you know, and I fight this fight and I do all that. But again, it's just falling back into those false images. People want to grow up and they want to be J-Lo, they want to be Mark Anthony, they want to be those false images, but those people don't have power, they don't have happy lives. They don't know what it means to really work for something out of themselves. You know, they think they can create their foundations, they think they're doing something good for humanity. No, they doing something good for humanity is really going down and getting your hands dirty, right? Really being the masawal. The masawal is the person who's the worker, right? The one who gets his hands dirty. The one who cuts the maize. The one who toils the soil, right? Is that how you say it? And it's that person. But everybody wants to identify with that false image. You know, that's what we're all trying to do. And that's why people think that they're going to go and get a good job and go to college and all that. And they're going to go to some kind of oasis. But they're going to find when they get there, and they see those people who have the money, and they're not going to be accepted. Nobody's going to want them there. Nobody's going to. People are going to make assumptions about them still.
Mm-hmm.
But if they were to stay in the community and identify with the community and do the work in the community to try to really build that place, then they would really find that place. But nobody wants to be vulnerable. Everybody just wants to be powerful and roll by on their, you know, Suburban with the big rims on it, because that's what we identify with. That's what we feel is really achieving. Being a powerful person or being rich, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We don't identify it with building something like Mission Dignity, where it came from scratch in some warehouse building into a youth organization that's worked throughout the school district in San Francisco with different schools, affected a handful of kids' lives. And even though, you know, we haven't served thousands of kids, but still those kids that we have served have been impacted by what we've taught them. And what we've taught them is going to stay with them forever. Nobody can take that away. You know, even their spirit, when it dies, is it going to continue with that? Because that's something they took from us, something we shared. But like I said, nobody cares about that. Nobody cares about being humble or vulnerable. Everybody wants to be powerful and strong. But the thing is that we don't know what those words really mean, what it really means to be powerful, what it really means to be strong. You know, we haven't decoded those words, what strength really is, you know. Is strength really the one who can carry the heaviest boulder? Or is it strength the person who has the strength to stand up to something that a lot of people said couldn't be done, right? That person, you know, which is really the strong person?
Mm-hmm.
And again, those are just images that can be decoded, and we can critically critically critique all those images. But you know, I think that's what's going on, and I think that's what people think power is, and I think that's what people think that's where they need to be. But unfortunately, we have a long history of like you said, racism and other isms that are going on in our communities, and I think we need to address those first before we can ever reach that place, you know, and it's going to take time.
Yeah, I mean, and we have this misconception that a lot of these isms are gone. I mean, a lot of people don't even believe that we still have this. Oh, no, you know, there's nothing going on. We're all fine. And like you're saying, I mean, who are the people that are the Minutemen? I mean, if you see, I mean, I know I was watching the news on May 1st. Some Minutemen came on the TV, and I was looking at them, and I was like, they're my people. They're fighting against their own people. And because they don't know what they're doing. I mean, people think that, oh, racism is gone. It's gone. But then, you know, they go through school. They might get that one job that they wanted all their lives. And then they see that, like Rigo was saying, they don't want them there. And then they're like, oh, there is racism. Maybe I should have learned about it. Maybe I should have, you know, had my eyes open. Yeah, maybe we should have talked about it. And then it's too late, you know? And, I mean, I personally don't want that to happen, you know? I want young people to see that we don't live in Wonderland. You know, we live in a place where there's still hate, there's still racism, there's still sexism, there's still all these different things, and we need to talk about them. We need to address them. We need to contribute to a change, because if you walk out of here and you try and get that job, I mean, you're gonna face it based on the color of your skin, based on which, I mean, anything, you know?
I think the key, you know, not to knock what Leslie's saying, I think we do need to talk about it. But I think when you mentioned the Gen of Six, I mean, that just reminds me, again, it's going back. These little events happen, right? So-and-so said this. Oh, you had Michael, whatever, that comedian who went off. And then, yeah, everybody makes this big rant. But then a week later, 2 months down the road, it's like everybody forgot. It's like it never happened. Where are the solutions? Who's creating the solutions? You have these community leaders, again, who are coming up and they say, well, this person is wrong. They should apologize and this and that. Like, for example, what the Mexican president said, oh, black people don't want to do the jobs Mexicans want to do, right? I think, you know, we need to critique that and say, well, is there some truth in that? Is there something that needs to be addressed there? Why is that? Is that really true? I think it's not enough for us to just say, well, why was that said, or why is that occurring, or why did so-and-so go on the radio and say these comments? But I think we need to figure out, well, what are we going to do to provide a solution for that? Because we just seem to talk about it for a while, and everybody creates this hype, but a solution is never produced, and those things are never really decoded, right? Why they're being said, who the person is, number one. Where does this person come from? What is his background? You know, what is his experience with black people or African-American people? And nobody does anything, right? And then some of us, you know, unfortunately in our Latino community, some of us, we don't even do anything, period. We don't even create we don't call a press conference when somebody says something about Mexicans or this and that. Nobody says anything, unfortunately, in our community. But I think that's the number one problem, that, you know, everybody creates this hype, but nobody does nothing. Nobody really works towards that. You know, maybe I'm not seeing it. You know, maybe I'm expecting something that occurred in the 60s where there was a big movement and you had people coming on and really people educating people. Maybe it is happening somewhere and I'm not just aware of it, you know, and I'd appreciate if somebody would drop some knowledge on me about it. But I think that's why it keeps happening, is because it's never really, a solution is never really being created, right? It's never really being addressed round to the real deal, right? Where we're really analyzing ourselves and saying, well, where are we at with this, right? You know, it's like, why are people saying this stuff about ourselves? What could we change about ourselves to have a better image of ourselves, right? Not for them, not for white folks. We don't need other people to love us. We need to love ourselves, right? But in order to do that, we have to look at ourselves and say, maybe there's some things we need to change, right? But going back again, it's like people create all this fuss, but then it's like it just blows over and it's done. And then 3 years down the road, somebody else will come on and say something crazy. And then all of a sudden, again, everybody get all hyped up and upset. And then it'll all die out again, and the cycle just keeps going.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we believe in consciousness, because consciousness is not about just addressing the issue, but you're providing a solution. You're decoding that, finding if there is some truth in what was said, or if there is some truth in what we heard or what we read, and then finding out, okay, well, how does that apply? How does it not apply, right? So consciousness really is a more feasible solution than just sitting around a table or protesting, because it's really active. It's the mind that needs to change. You know, mm-hmm. it's not people just coming together and saying, oh, we love each other. No, there has to be a mindset. There has to be a mind change that has to occur in order for there really to be change. Because if people don't believe in the movement, if people don't believe in there being a unity among races, then that there's no point. There's no point in having the marches. There's no point in people getting upset because people don't believe it enough. Right?
And then I think also people are choosing to let this happen, because actually my mother was a domestic. So it ain't no Latin thing about cleaning people's houses and doing that, and blacks don't want to do it. I'm sure Latin people don't want to do it, because the white people don't want to do it. That's why they got non-whites doing it, because the white person's going to say, I want some money, or they get white people from other countries and exploit them. And then the same thing, like being gardeners and painters. Who built the plantations? Who painted them? Who did the landscaping? You know, all this stuff. This is the stuff that blacks were doing. And maybe, I don't know, maybe it's like one of these things that you thought this is supposed to be your permanent niche. Even though you might hate it, you mm-hmm. can all say, I can always be a gardener or a housekeeper. And then now the immigrants are coming in and taking that. But it's just like, maybe nobody should do that. Right. Maybe there should be a thing... Not maybe, there should be, and people should make it and take advantage of it to create the changes. You do not have to necessarily have a PhD to make a change. And then the people right. that created colleges and stuff usually were people who were illiterate and on. They would be farmers and stuff. That you even have those cowboy movies that reinforce it. And they build it, and they're the regular people, and then they have the school person come and teach at their school. But they're the ones that build it, created the town, and on. And those are humble people that did great things. And then people now are flipping the script and making it seem like it's the great people that bestow this on the humble people. And you're supposed to sit down and not question why tuition has gone up so drastically, why they're cutting back on poverty things or the set-asides, whatever words you want to use. Why can't a college that is paid for by the state turn around and charge private college rates? Where's mm-hmm. the money going? Because supposedly the government's not supposed to make money. So then how can you charge these big tuitions if supposedly the money doesn't go anywhere? And then all of a sudden, now we see all these chancellors are making private rates. So I guess they could say, well, this is where the money is going. But supposedly you're supposed to be there to teach the people, and you're mm-hmm. supposed to accept that you're not going to get paid the same as the guy at Yale gets paid. That's why Yale is Yale. And state is state, and Cal is Cal. But nobody's questioning this. And maybe we don't, maybe that's the wrong word, is question. Just change it. Stop it. Don't even question. Just stop it. So my thing is, what's the next steps? Like, if we know some young people, if there's some collaborations, I mean, are you guys open? You know, what are some steps that we could start taking?
I think the steps to be taken would be exactly, yeah, doing some collaborations, because, again, critiquing ourselves, critiquing our community. We've had some people come through, and I've had people talk to me way before in the past, and say, yeah, let's collaborate, yeah, let's do this, and then I never hear from them again, you know? You have Rasa, you have all people from all different communities, and then you never hear from them again. So it's like, again, going back, looking at ourselves, saying, okay, we gotta see what we're doing right and what we're not, you know, because if we sit around and expect just because we're doing good work in the community, because we're helping kids or doing whatever field we're in, that's, you know, it's community work, and just say, oh, we're doing something good. No, it's not enough. You know, we really have to go the extra mile and really, really be disciplined in the sense that, say, if, you know, if I'm going to collaborate with somebody, then we're really going to do something strong. We're going to put something down on paper, right?
So what I would like to do, I would like to invite you guys to write for the Justice Foundation blog. We have a blog that we haven't activated, but this could be the way to activate it. And I would love to invite you guys to make some contributions, and we can start our blog up, and let's put some of this in action.
All right.
Let's put this in action, because you guys are the next group. You're the ones,
right? Definitely.
You're gonna inspire me to say that my life was worth it. You know, really. Yeah. I mean, because there's points where sometimes you feel it's going to be your children that do it, and like you're saying, your own children could be asleep. Then you get disappointed, and then you stop doing what you were doing because you were trying to see this in your children.
Yeah.
And if we're a community, then y'all are my children too.
Right.
So if my own children don't step up, I can still look at it, you're all my children, and we still do it until my own children wake up, if ever.
Exactly, because we have to teach the children, the children are going to teach us, because we forget things too. You know, as we get older, some of us get big-headed. Some of us get big-headed, we go to the community work, we do this and that, we get, you know, to being a community leader, and we're in a position where people in the community respect us or whatever, and we get big-headed. But, you know, we go back to the children, and the children remind us that, hey, you know, you was a kid once, and you didn't know it all at one point, and you had to go through a growing phase just like I am, and we have to all remain teachable. I think that's another key thing, is we all have to remain teachable throughout. And I think that's what happens, is that sometimes, not just our communities, but other people, whether they be in the music industry or wherever they are that are making money, they don't remain teachable. And they say, well, I know it all, I've seen it all, I'm at the top and I have it all, and that's that. But no, we all have to remain teachable and be able to decode things continually, because if there's something very important that Emilio has taught us, is the enemies of knowledge, and how that topic for discussion that he brought up, you know, 3-4 years ago, and I still remember it, it's a lifelong battle, you know.
Exactly.
It goes on forever. You're never going to know it all. You're never going to be completely knowledgeable, but you're going to keep trying to be, right? Even though you know you might never be, you won't make it that far, but you're always going to be fighting it. You're always going to be trying to learn things and not let power control you and have you think that you have the power of information, or think you have it all clear, that, you know, clarity has come to you and you see everything correctly and everything that you analyze and you say is correct, or be afraid to learn new things, right? Because you said we're constantly changing too. You know, maybe someday somebody will come along with another theme or another method of doing things. Maybe this one day might not apply so much anymore, right? So we have to prepare. We have to be ready to accept that too. When change comes along, say, okay, you know, I think, you know, we've reached a level of consciousness in our community where we don't maybe need to address that so much. Now we need to address other issues. So that's another thing, right? So we can't be fearful of change. And we got to accept that, you know, our time is short, so we got to make use of it, right? Learn as much as we can and use our time well and accept the fact that, hey, you know, our time's going to run out, so we have to make good use of it and not get tired overall, because that's what happens. We get tired.
Yeah. So what Rigo was saying, I mean, I think a lot of people think that this is just a phase. Oh, you know, you start doing community work and then you move on. And that's not what it is. I mean, Paulo Freire always said that, you know, when we teach, we have to have like a didactic way of teaching. And that means that you're constantly learning. Even if I want to be a teacher, I have to know that my students will teach me also, you know, that I have to see that they all have different stories. And we all have different stories, right? But, I mean, this is something that you're committing to for life. I mean, we might not see a huge change in our lifetimes, but we have to understand that we're giving our lives to contribute to this thing that we understand will be our children's future or our grandchildren's future. I mean, this is a life learning experience. This is our lives that we're giving, you know, for our futures. Whether we may see a big, something big happen or not. I mean, we have to understand that this is something that will take a long time.
Are you a small business or entrepreneur? You know you need to be online, but you don't know where to start? Come to RedTap. We'll help you with all of your online needs. Everything from website design to e-commerce site setup to e-marketing. We'll speak to you in your language and help you build a successful online business. Give us a call at 415-285-0585. RedTap is located in the heart of the Mission District at 1360 Valencia Street and is a proud sponsor of the JusticeFound.org podcast. You've been listening to the Worker Justice Talk podcast edition with Roland Washington. The Worker Justice Talk is a production of JusticeFound.org and RedTap. Most editions are recorded live at the studios of RedTap, located in the heart of the Mission District in San Francisco. The Worker Justice Talk is available online at JusticeFound.org and for download on iTunes. The post-production audio engineer was me, David J. Kortzmeyer. Join us next time for another edition of the Worker Justice Talk.